Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. Jeff and Jason talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. We are alive. Season 4, Episode 13. It is the first week of March 2021.
And we still have some ice, but it's getting warm.
We do have lots of ice. Lots of ice. But I heard 57 degrees this weekend, but there's still 2 feet of ice out there, so you can go fishing. And we have a really, really interesting topic tonight. I am very excited to hear about it. It is going to be about Boundary Waters ice fishing. And this was too extreme for me, but Jason was there.
Well, it doesn't take a lot to get too extreme for Jeff. You know, if he can't wear his Crocs, he's pretty much...
Socks and Crocs?
Socks and Crocs. He's pretty much out. But...
Well, we're going to hear all about this winter camping ice fishing adventure in the Boundary Waters, so that'll be awesome.
It's going to be a hoot.
All right, so I am really thirsty, actually. We may have talked a little bit before the show started, and I got thirstier. So Jay, what are you drinking tonight?
I went back to a different gas station in town.
Okay.
And I found something that's actually pretty appropriate. It's Leinen Kugel's Snowdrift Vanilla Porter.
Oh, I've had those before. They're really good.
So we're going to give that a run. We'll see.
Is that in a can or a bottle?
It's in a bottle. Oh, I have a feeling it's going to be pretty dark. Boy, that didn't make much noise, did it?
No, the bottles don't.
That was kind of lackluster. It's kind of like a flat root beer.
It's like a flat root beer with a kick.
But not bad. Not bad at all.
Tonight I have Deschutes.
Deschutes? That's awesome.
I have Deschutes.
Okay.
Deschutes or Deschutes or Deschutes. I don't know. It's Deschutes, I'm pretty sure. Black Butte Porter.
So we're in the porters. We're both drinking porters tonight. Boy, yeah. That's interesting.
And I think you say that Butte, right? B-U-T-T-E?
Butte.
That
Butte? Yeah, it's not butt.
Not butt. Okay.
Deschutes, butt.
Well, I'm drinking Deschutes.
We're going to add that to another company that's not going to ask for a sponsorship.
So it is made in Bend, Oregon, and it says soft breeze, sturdy roots, surprising balance, savor a smooth and unexpected complex porter that stood the test of time. That's pretty fancy. All right, I got to open this thing. I'm getting thirsty. No noise. Yep, that's a porter.
Doesn't taste like flat root beer.
A little bit, yeah. It's like nutty, right? Yeah. Doesn't it have a nutty kind of thing to
it? Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that.
It's winter. This is what you drink in winter. All right, well, moving on to show business, Jason. Patron, not Patron. We appreciate our patrons. We haven't got any new ones, but that's okay. We appreciate the ones we have. So thanks for all of our patrons for giving to the show. It helps us cover the costs of producing the show.
Keeps the wives happy.
Appreciate that. Keeps the wives happy, yep. Gear, we have our Hard Water Show gear and merch available on our website. You can order t-shirts, sweatshirts, that kind of thing.
Socks,
yep. The best way to interact with us is on social media, Instagram and Facebook. You can also find us on our website, hardwatershow.com. And we do have a YouTube page, Jason.
Yes.
Someday you'll get there.
I think we might be putting some stuff up on there. A couple of fish catching videos, which I suspect are much more interesting to make than they are to watch. Lots of like me smiling and the rod bent and the drag going. For minutes on end.
For a minute. There it goes. It runs again. We have our email, hardwatershow@gmail.com. You can reach us at that. And just remember, we do read everything, even if it doesn't make it on the show.
And we always appreciate the emails and the reach outs and very much the little notes people send to say thanks for this or whatever. It's really cool. Thank you very much.
the only people we would like to say don't send us anything more are those spammer people. Holy cow. We get like, I mean, on Instagram, it won't stop.
No, it's constant. Like,
I don't know how to get rid of that. It's stuff. Annoying.
It is. I mean, I know I keep trying to say stop sending it to Hardwater Show, and then I try to send them your address.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. Yeah, we only get it on our Hardwater Show account, and it comes from Instagram. But anyways, yeah. Keep on sending us stuff. We pick through it. We get rid of all the junk, and we find your good content. All right, so listener news and current events. Started out, Jay, walleye season is closed
in Minnesota. It is, and end of a season.
So you can still go out there and catch panfish, and actually pike is open in a lot of places longer now, which is kind of different than it used to be. I mean, check your regs, but I was surprised at that. Even on Mille Lacs, they were still open through the end of the month. But, you know, pretty much after walleye season ended, it cleared out.
And every state has different regs, so Iowa has a lot of things open, yet inland waters. But different lakes have different regs, so make sure you know your rules.
And even in Minnesota, the border lakes have different I mean, it's all over the place. So, yeah, just make sure you know what you're doing. It's complex. All right. So I had a couple articles that were pretty good in my favorite, one of my favorite magazines I read, the Outdoor News, which we mentioned probably quite a bit. So Steve Carney has an article in there, and he was talking about maggots and had a few interesting points that I wanted to bring up. He said, you know, he was talking about maggots versus waxworms and that they're very different. So like a Eurolarva is a maggot, where a waxworm, I believe, is like a, I don't know what waxworms are from, actually, but it's different than a maggot.
Really?
Yeah. So he said, Steve said, one on your hook is good, because when you put them on there, there's like oozy juices that come out of them, and that's really what the fish are attracted to.
Okay.
But he did say change them often, because that oozy juice goes away, and then the fish are less interested.
Oozy juice, like the technical term?
I don't know what it is. They don't call it oozy juice, but you know, when you put one of these things on your hook, the stuff comes out. I don't know what it is.
They do kind of gush all over when you poke them on. Yeah.
So the fish like the gush.
Good Lord.
He said color doesn't matter, but you know, when I get them, they're always red or multicolored, the Eurolarva.
Okay. Yeah. So are you talking about Eurolarva right now, or maggots or waxworms?
He said they're the same thing. He said not waxworms. He said those are different, but he said maggots and Eurolarva are the same thing, is what he said.
Maybe the Eurolarva sounds more appetizing than maggots.
I went fishing with maggots.
What'd you catch them on? Maggots. Oozy gooey maggots. That'll get the kids out fishing.
Now, if you said, I use Eurolarva and I took my BMW, and you're very European and fancy then.
What if it's a mousie? What's a mousie?
I don't know.
Shouldn't we know these things? We're four seasons into a fishing show, and a hard water fishing show.
Two decades into ice fishing.
Well, what exactly is it? It's whatever the gas station has. I buy them all, and I put them on the hook.
Exactly. And if they have both, you're like, maybe I need both. I better get them both.
Is it like a combination? Like, I need two maggots, one waxy and one mousy. And then if you get the order wrong, they don't bite. You got to flip them around and get the order right.
It's like a buffet.
It is. Well, if they're treble hook, you can just kind of stack them on each hook.
One on each treble and whatever they want, they're going to get them. His other point was sometimes the hard part about fishing with these is that you track two little fish, like the little perch and the little dink annoying fish that kind of get in the way.
So when I was at Brushy this year, I caught that really nice bass on a waxy. Wow. Well, I think it's a waxy. I went to the bait shop guy and I said, he needs some waxies, and he handed those to me. So I'm assuming that's what they are.
Well, I've seen two,
right? I don't know. I call it khaki-colored.
Yes, khaki-colored.
Match my pants.
Taupe? They're taupe.
I don't know.
Now, I don't know if spikes versus waxies versus mousies, but I think they all are kind of taupe, right? And then you have Eurolarva, which are typically red, or I've seen them multicolored, but they're usually red is what I've seen them, and that's what he was talking about.
Okay. I've never fished with red things like that.
I have. We have them here. I bought them. Because when you go to the store, you need one of everything because you're going fishing, and what if they're biting?
Oh, yeah, because invariably you run up to somebody and you say, well, what are they biting on? And they're biting on the thing you don't have.
You're like, what do you have, fat heads? Oh, it's shiners today.
Yeah. Dang it. Not again.
Dang it. Off to the bait shop you go. Instead, you just buy one of everything. So that was a good article. I enjoyed that. And I think we're in panfish season a little bit more, so that was interesting. Mm-hmm. The other one I like to read about there is the Lake Detective. Okay. And we've talked about lakes a little bit. He's kind of an expert in lakes, so I like reading about him. I wrote rule of thumb, even though I wrote tomb. I guess I can't type today. Rule of tomb. A rule of thumb for a lake. 25% of the lake needs to be 15 feet or deeper, or it will freeze out.
Well, that's really interesting.
That's what he said. And he's pretty expert on this stuff. I thought that was interesting. So when you're thinking about these smaller lakes to fish, now he said, you know, if there's other ways to keep it aerated, maybe it'll be okay.
Generally, I think I disagree. I would offer, I know lakes that aren't all 15 feet deep and they don't freeze out.
25%.
Yeah, I know. But I know lakes that are not 15 feet deep that don't freeze out.
Now, that might be in Minnesota where it's colder longer, right?
Well, maybe Minnesota's a really long state, so you'd really have to...
True.
Yeah, I don't know about your statistic.
Okay, well, you can take it up with the lake detective.
Tell him to call me.
He knows a lot more about this.
We need more information. Is that a person? Well, is that lake detective?
It is a real person,
We need to get that person on the show.
Oh my gosh, I don't know if he would come on, but that would be awesome if you would.
Well, so that's you have a job now for next year. For next year, we have a goal of an interview of the lake detective.
Lake detective. And the other thing he said that was interesting, and maybe I knew this already, but water is most dense at 39 degrees. And in the winter, most of the water is 39 degrees.
Really?
They said in most lakes, that's about what it is in most places. They said at the, you know, it'll adjust a little bit, but for most times that's 39 degrees in the winter. So I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
So these are knowledge from people who know things versus us, right? Mm-hmm. So we had a question, Jason, and this was a tough one. And I think you responded a little bit, but somebody asked us, what episode do you recommend that you listen to first? And I'm like, I don't know if they said first, but what episode do you recommend?
Yeah.
That was a tough question.
It was. And so I kind of thought through the episodes. And just for whatever reason, I don't know why, I picked the one where we interviewed the taxidermist, Ben, Midwest Taxidermy. Because I just, you know, you don't hear, that was a really unique episode for us. You don't hear those on most other fishing shows. They're not talking about a taxidermist of you know, what do you do with that catch? They don't talk about that. So I just thought that was a unique show, so I had recommended that one.
So I didn't know what to say, but I did look up, for reference, our most popular show, our most downloaded show, which was Season 3, Episode 8, Ice Fishing Jigging Techniques.
Huh.
And that was for January 22nd, 2020. Now, it was about 2,700 downloads, and that was in the top 10, so.
Okay, Yeah, I didn't go by that. I just, maybe, you know, the episodes that me personally, I like to listen to when I do re-listen to some of our episodes, because I do, are the ones where we've interviewed, like, friends and family. Like, I really enjoyed the episode where we had my dad on. We talked about socks, you know, keeping your feet warm. Yeah. I really liked that. I really liked one of the ones we did up at Lake of the Woods with my Uncle Mark, and interviewed Mark. And then the ones with our guys, you know, on our hard water shows. Those are probably some of my favorite episodes that I really enjoy listening to, just because I like hearing the other people talk, you know, and tell their stories. So that's what it is for me, I guess.
And it's kind of funny that we're talking about this, because we are coming up very soon, not this episode, but we are coming up on the 50th episode of the Hard Water Fishing Show.
That's amazing. Very soon.
This year it'll happen. So
very cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that was a tough question. That one kind of stumped us. You know, I couldn't even come up with something funny. I would guess, and this is just me, and we should listen to our first episode sometime again. Our first episode is probably not the best one.
No, I didn't.
I'm just going to say.
You know, we should go back and listen to that and see how far we've come.
Yeah, so it probably isn't that one. But you got to start somewhere. Colby S. Sent us a message. We had asked about bobber stops a few episodes ago. Which bobber stops, because I get frustrated with bobber stops, and he said he uses the string ones like the ones I always use, right? Just the little strings
that you pull. That's what I use.
Yep, I don't like them. They're a pain in my butt, but I have nothing better. I do like the thinner stringed ones. Then there's some thicker stringed ones that I don't like as much.
Okay.
But, yeah, so thanks, Colby. And he was a guide. Like, I think he said he guided people, so... you know, if a guide uses them, we can probably use them.
Good enough for us.
Oh, and one other thing, Ken, from our last episode from Track Machines, that was awesome. I still want to build one.
I've been thinking about it quite a bit. I was at a farm store back home here a couple weeks ago, and they had a bucket sale going on where if you could fit something in a bucket, you could be 22% off.
Yeah,
and I was like, well, if I took that welder I want out of a box, I think it'd go in the bucket. But they wouldn't. Let me do it. So
Jason's like jumping on
the welder. If I can get that thing in the bucket, I want my 22% off.
I know. Oh, believe me, we've been searching the classifieds. Not that I'm not always shopping for ice fishing equipment and cars, but I keep on looking at people selling those things too, and I'm like, oh, I could so use one.
I know.
All right. Well, but Ken, we kind of went right or left or not down the middle on that one because it was a long story. But, you know, last episode, I had a left-hand milk stout. That was what I drank for my beer.
Yeah.
Which was unplanned but surprisingly accurate because that is brewed just south of Wyoming in Colorado. So Ken knew exactly what it was. He had mentioned that, hey, that's a beer from our area. So we had an interview from Wyoming and a beer from Colorado that was in the area. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Okay.
And it was really good.
You did like your milk beer.
Oh, it was good. I want one right now. I mean, this is good, but that was really good.
You know what I had for the first time the other day on the way home? This is another left-hand turn. And I shouldn't have had it, and I probably make sure I don't have them again, was the Monster. You know, I used to drink the Monsters.
Yeah.
I did one of their coffee ones. Oh, those are dangerous. Because that was really good. So don't do that.
So I'm not a big Monster drinker, but I have had one before, I think. But, you know, I am also a NASCAR fan. And NASCAR and Monster, like Monster is like the Monster Energy Series, mm-hmm. right? And they also, so they give away free Monster at NASCAR races sometimes, you know, like cans of it, wow. Which is kind of cool. Yeah, like there's a big truck and there's girls giving away Monster.
Huh.
So that's when I've had Monster before. So yeah, that's my Monster story. I don't know why I told that.
Thanks for sharing that.
I don't know where that
we're kind of random tonight. Hang in there, folks. Oh, buckle up. Put on the seatbelt. If you're trying to chart this episode, you may need more than one page.
Speaking of buckle up.
Yeah.
This is right on point. Speaking of buckle up, did you see that there was an airpline waiting to get off the ice on Mille Lacs?
You know, that landing was rough. How the heck was he going to get that thing up the landing?
I don't know, but like I heard him like, you know, like you see the airplane. I don't know if he landed up there. I don't know what he was doing, but there was an airplane right there on the, this weekend because everybody had to have their ice shacks off by Monday. It was like a, you know, ice castle pickup truck train. And then there was an airplane. And you're like,
just hanging out.
But that did tip me off this weekend, on Saturday, March 6th. They have Iceport 2021. So they build a landing strip on Lake Mille Lacs and a whole bunch of like small private planes fly in and have lunch and fly away.
So you going to take your plane up there?
Yeah, my plane. I mean, I can flap my arms really fast, I guess. I don't know. But it looked pretty cool. So I don't want to make it up there, but it was It's at the Boathouse restaurant up there. Okay. So if you're into Plains and you want to go fish for some Northerns, I guess, because you can still fish with those on Mille Lacs, you can do that and see a bunch of airplanes come in.
That's awesome.
So I think I know you have a fishing report, Jay, but I think your fishing report is the rest of the episode. So
okay,
we can probably hold off on that one. But I did make it up to Mille Lacs with Northwoods Dave. So we got
yeah, you got to tell me about you and Dave kicking it at Mille Lacs.
So while you were off on your adventure, we were sitting in my wheelhouse watching. I think we watched about 10 movies. Maybe we just watched movie after movie.
Well, like Sleepless in Seattle, The Notebook, things like that, right?
Yeah, right. The Notebook, yeah, right. I don't know if I've ever even seen The Notebook. I don't know. When Harry Met Sally.
When Harry Met Sally. Like that, right? All the classics. All the classics.
Yes. Uh-huh. We didn't watch those. But we watched a bunch of movies. We caught some walleyes. Not a lot. And they were smaller than the ones we've been catching up there before. You know, this year I've been catching, I would say the normal walleye on Mille Lacs this year was like a 19 or 20.
Okay.
Like almost everyone I would catch would be within a half an inch of a 19 or 20. I did catch a few. We caught a 26 and then, you know, some other 20s. But this weekend we saw a lot more like 12s.
So what were you catching them on?
17s.
Though? So, I mean, that's the most important thing in the fishing report, right? Like, what kind of lure?
Dave was using his lure. He had a red buckshot, but not a buckshot. It was actually red with a glow stick in it.
Yep, okay.
And then a lure, so that's what he was using. He didn't change his lure.
What kind of glow stick did he have?
He was using a red lure that uses a glow stick, but there was actually no glow stick in it.
Okay.
But they liked red. For some reason, they liked red, so I found something red. I was trying pink because you had used pink before the pink jig heads because we were fishing first break. Right by where you had fished before. And so I thought, oh, pink jig head, that's what you guys used before, but didn't catch anything on the pink jig
head. So did you, the red. You hooked it horizontally through the lip, little pink jig head?
I tried that, yes.
And did you?
It didn't work.
Set the rod down, play a video game for 10 minutes, lose, and then jig, and then go back to playing your video game?
No, I didn't
have it. So you didn't do it right.
Maybe that's.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't have the video game.
You didn't do it right.
Yeah. No, it was probably more like I watched a movie and caught a fish. That was about the cadence.
Oh, yeah. You need to jig every commercial if you had commercials, but no commercials. Every other commercial.
The one thing we did do, we started out with my ice shack in one spot, and it got pretty busy. There was a lot of people up. It was last weekend. The guy next to us, it was kind of funny. He had his permanent like skid house. So he was like spreading out all over the place. He had like tip ups that weren't really down in one spot and like his car parked over here to try to like defend his territory out there. It was kind of weird.
It's like fighting a losing battle up there.
Yeah. So we were fishing kind of far from him, but there was still a fair amount of people. So we actually cranked up my wheelhouse and moved it away from people and we actually did better.
Okay.
We drove around looking for another spot and, you know, there was just enough snow out there where you couldn't just go anywhere. And I would have had to call to have a spot plowed. So we kind of picked a spot that looked good and went there. And just being away from people seemed to make a difference.
You could have just.
But it wasn't great fishing.
Could have just shoveled a spot.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
You have to put two layers of socks on with your Crocs.
I did read, though, back to the outdoor news, there was an article in there from Mike Buckingham. He gave a fishing report about Mille Lacs, and he said, if you were catching fish, it was successful on Mille Lacs because it's been pretty slow. So we caught fish, so I would call it a success. Dave brought a whitefish home to smoke.
Huh.
Tubalee.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's cool.
So that was kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were biting out there quite a bit. We only caught one, but, you know, they were doing that dart around, stare at your bobber thing forever. So that's my fishing report. Gear, from a gear perspective, I only have one thing for gear. So when I left, I told you we didn't plow at a spot. Well, so I hooked up my shack, gave her the beans, and went forward until I hit a snowbank. And we
game over.
We high-centered the car, But Dave was not impressed by the fact that my SUV did not have tow hooks on the front.
See, I don't understand why they do that. They make an all-wheel drive vehicle. You know, does that even have like the little thing, the plug you pull out and you can put the recovery
on? No. Yeah. So he had to hook his truck up to my trailer hitch, and we pulled it sideways, and I eventually rocked it back and forth a bit. We had to disconnect the HVAC because, you know, that wasn't going to work. And so then, once we got that out, then I did have to shovel a little bit. And the plow guy, James from the Red Door, he kind of felt bad for me. He drove by with his V plow and cleaned off the rest so I could pull my ice shack back out. But, you know, we got it out. So tow hooks are important. I think I'm just going to have to get a bigger car or something. I think the SUV might be retiring from its ice shack pulling days.
You could have slapped some chains on that bad boy.
Yeah, I know. It's got winter tires, but maybe chains. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But Dave was not impressed. Northwoods Dave says a car needs tow hooks.
Yeah. Well,
like,
you
slowed down. I'm like, it would. Like the snow went to the center line of the door.
It would have sped up the process, though, to have a tow point on there. You could have just hooked a strap up.
I know.
Given it heck, and off the road you went. Yep. Down the road you go.
And I looked underneath the car to it's just a bunch of plastic.
Yeah, you got to go around the arms very gently with a soft tie. Yeah, you can't.
Yep, I've watched the off-road recovery.
Yeah, you could hook to the bumper, but it wouldn't be on there much longer.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. All right, so we are probably getting to that point of the show where we have our special guest who happens to be you.
I know, that's exciting. I rarely do anything exciting enough to be the special guest tonight.
I know. So, Jason, tell us about this Boundary Waters ice fishing adventure you went on.
Well, how far back do you want me to go, Jeff?
Well, you were only there for like 3 days, right?
That's true. So this trip has been... So there I was minding my own business. Now, that's how you have to start every good story. There I was minding my own business. And our friend Ole had years ago, we had talked about we should do a winter trip. We should do a winter ice fishing trip or winter Boundary Waters trip. So people that aren't from Minnesota may not be familiar with the Boundary Waters. We've talked about it before, but the Boundary Waters is a national park. I don't know. Is it a national park?
No, it's like a... I don't even know what it is.
It's classified as a wilderness area.
There you go.
And they call it the Boundary Waters Canoe Area is its official title, I guess. And it's located between the Minnesota and the Canadian, you know, the United States and Canadian border there on the north end of Minnesota. So anyway, it's wilderness, so it has a lot of rules and regulations that go with it, right? You can't take motorized vehicles, you can't take motorized augers, nothing with an engine, nothing with a motor. It's all human propulsion type devices. So canoe, your feet, you know, hand augers, all those types of stuff. So it's definitely
And there's even restrictions on what kind of, like, you can't bring glass, right?
From a leave no trace. Yep. There's designated campsites. In the winter, though, you can camp you can pretty much camp anywhere in the winter. And we'll get to that. So we concocted this trip. We found, other than Ole and I, we found four other like-minded crazy people. So we had a group of six that went in.
I was not one of those like-minded crazy
Jeff,
people.
Even though I asked and you know, I said that it'd be super nice for you to join me on this epic trip and it would just mean so much. He's like, no.
Yeah, that might have happened.
So he didn't. So we took off we went out of the Grand Marais area. We walked across a border lake to the Boundary Waters. And then we walked into a Boundary Water lake, and we found a campsite, and we camped. And we caught some fish. What else do you want to know?
Well, I think that's the end of the story. Okay, thanks for listening today. No, just kidding. Totally kidding. Like, what was the difference in ice fishing in the Boundary Waters? I mean, what are different than, like, me and my wheelhouse?
Yeah, so...
Let's contrast those two realities.
We saw one other guy that was closer to us, and we saw two other dots off in the distance, and we had this good-sized lake that went on for several miles all to ourselves. Nobody else. We didn't see a snowmobile because they're not legal up there in the lake we were on, right? So you want to talk about peaceful, super peaceful. you know, no people, had the lake essentially to ourselves, had the area essentially to ourselves. So, you know, it was the solitude of it. It was the peacefulness of it. I think that that for me really makes that area so special. And even with a lot of people, more people getting outdoors, I still think people don't do winter camping. It, this was our first time doing it, and we did some test runs. We talked about that in another episode, but it just takes a different level of gear and kind of preparation to go do it because of the cold and the things you're dealing with.
And you guys had a really good weekend, right? Like weather-wise,
beautiful weather. Yeah, Friday was our toughest day weather-wise. We had like 30-mile-an-hour winds, but generally it was warm. It was like 29, 30 degrees. But we had these 30-mile-an-hour winds, and they were gusty. They kind of come over the big hills, and we had all these, like, snow tornado things going on, like the, you know, dirt devils. These were snow devils. And so you'd be sitting...
Like on Mars. I saw the Mars rover head.
Just like that. Mars. Just like that, except not Mars. And so you'd be sitting there, you know, and then you'd look up, and if you didn't pay attention, they'd just smack you in the face, and you'd be like sand hitting your face, and it was really kind of cold. You know, but if you could see they were coming, you could kind of get your back to them and they'd blow by you and then you'd be back to normal again. So, but it was pretty cool. So we got there on Thursday night and we caught our first trout Thursday night. Sweet. Yeah. So Ole actually pulled in a trout on a tip up in about 24 feet of water and the tip up on a, just on a frozen fathead and a bear hook.
All right, so you guys caught fish. What kind of fish were you catching?
We caught trouts, lake trout, and we caught northern, and we caught an eel pout.
Oh, nice. Hey.
Caught an eel pout. That's okay. Yeah.
Don't you have to frown.
Caught an eel pout.
That's awesome.
No, I frowned because it was getting to be walleye time, and I had, you know, and I'm, and then it was a And I like, don't get me wrong, I like catching eel pouts, but I don't like catching eel pouts when I'm hoping there's a night bite for walleye, and it's an eel pout, so.
You're always hoping for that night bite. I know,
and we had a full moon this whole trip, so if we had had a good night bite, I mean, we could have just stayed for hours, but.
So what kind of fishing gear were you using? You mentioned tip-ups, what kind of...
So we used tip-ups, and we just used rod and reel. Now no gas augers, no electric augers up there, so everything had to be hand drilled. We had just, I would say, 18 inches to 2 feet of ice. So good ice. And so what we learned pretty quickly is we used a two-man approach on the hand auger. So my uncle Ron was with us, and he's been on the show, and so I think Ron did a really nice job of figuring this out with myself, is one guy turns the handle and the other guy holds the top, and the guy that holds the top kind of goes counterclockwise to the other guy's clockwise. The guy drilling is going counterclockwise, actually. And the guy holding on the top is kind of doing a little clockwise, you know, kind of the opposite direction to balance. But we could.
So you're like holding your arms straight out and they're going underneath your arms kind of thing?
Well, yeah. So you got the handle, you know, the little knob.
Yep.
And so then, the other guy's underneath, you know, you're on opposite sides of the auger. It's not anything weird where like you're on the same side of the auger. opposite sides of the auger. And
you were socially distanced.
We were, absolutely. But we could punch a hole in less than a minute doing that.
Wow.
Yeah, and you could
an 18 inches.
You'd have to clear the ice, you know, the ice shavings, but for the most part you could power all the way through in one shot. Whereas, you know, trying to do it yourself, you just I don't know. I just didn't
maybe you didn't have somebody man enough there.
You're welcome to come show us. We're using I wouldn't say we had any sort of fancy auger. Sean had a nice edge on Ole had a nice edge on his auger. It was an old Mora, you know, hand auger.
Okay, yeah.
But I wouldn't say it.
Did you bring two, or did you just have the one auger?
One auger.
Wow. So if it went down, you were done.
Yeah, they don't go down a lot, though.
You're right.
You got to really work, I think, to break a hand auger. And when you're fishing 20, 30, 40 feet of water, you're not hitting rocks or nothing.
True, so, yeah. Got to watch for the extra
pins. But, I mean, we had six guys, so we had, you know, we had all our tip-ups out. We had 12 tip-ups out, and then we had some jigging holes that we'd pull tip-ups randomly and then do some jigging. And so we drilled. I mean, I wouldn't say we skimped on the holes.
So did you, it sounded like a lot of tip-up. Was there a lot of tip-up kind of hanging out, watching the tip-ups?
Yeah, there was. Kind of fishing? Yeah. So what we did a lot was we would, you know, we get our tip-ups running and we do camp chores and stuff, you know.
Okay.
And do that kind of stuff because it just takes, you know, cooking meals took a little bit more work and just, you know, putzing around. And the days are shorter, you know, the days aren't super long and... just time goes so fast when you're doing that kind of stuff. Just days just evaporate.
Well, and when you're camping, at least when I go camping, there's like, you know, you cook breakfast and then you clean up and then you start cooking lunch and then you clean up and then you start cooking dinner and then you clean up and you go to bed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, not quite that.
No, like that, you but do it's stuff kind of close. In between, but yeah, it just, you know, you kind of putz around and you're just moving at a different pace. But so we caught a, you know, I wouldn't say we nailed, you know, like it was this crazy fast and furious pace, but we caught some really nice trout and I'll throw some of those pictures up. And those, my gosh, I can see how people get addicted to those. I mean, just
the tug.
I think the video, and we'll probably put it up on Facebook or on Instagram, or what do you call that thing? YouTube. We'll probably put it up on YouTube. Yeah. But, I mean, it's over like 6 minutes long, the one that I caught and just ran and ran and ran. And we've got one of Ron catching one, and then Sean's on a tip-up. So we've got some good video of those. Sweet. And I mean, even on the tip-ups, you know, when Sean caught his, Ole caught his, You had to let it run the line through your fingers because it was so strong, you know. Oh, well, wow. And we had like a 6 pound line leader on the end, so you can't horse it, you know.
You're right.
So we caught a couple on smelt.
Okay,
frozen. And then a couple on fatheads, frozen fatheads, and then I caught mine on a jointed pinhead minnow. A white and like a lake trout-ish colored, you know, that blue, white, reddish clam pinhead minnow is what I caught. And that was the first time I'd ever used that lure.
You're going to use it again, aren't you?
You know, I used it a little bit after that and I took it off because it wasn't catching any fish. You know, because it just was slow. So it kind of threw the tackle box at him. And guess what Ron caught his on? You'll never guess. You'll never guess. Never in a million years.
Glow perch, rattlespoon. Nope.
Try again. What's the one? You try one more time. And I'll give you a hint.
I mean, I only know that and the glow Lindy. You know, the glow spoons.
It's something everybody has in their tackle box if they've been a fisherman long enough for ice fishing. Everybody's got one.
Swedish
pimple. Yes, sir.
Oh.
the least but last most used lure, right? That's like you're like, I don't know, I'll put the Swedish pimple on. And my God, he caught one on it.
That's awesome.
It is. I'm you gotta be kidding me. Because I have like four of them, you know, and I use them every once in a while. I don't think I've ever caught a fish on one.
I know, but, I haven't either.
You know, you gotta pull it out. You know, when life's hopeless. And to his credit, we said that and he's like, well, it was the last night at 5:30, so he's like, that's why I put it on.
And Hail Mary.
And he threw the old Hail Mary, and by God, he landed it. So that was pretty cool.
What kind of presentation were you running on those? Did you have the, you know, 25 treble hook crazy things, or just one hook, or what were you using?
No, so on the tip-ups were all the single hooks, like a red single tin hook.
Okay, yep.
And then the other thing I would say, the one tip-up that we did probably the best on was right off a break. So like it was in almost 48 feet of water. We didn't set it off the bottom. So it was close to a 24-foot shelf. So we actually were probably 30 feet away from that shelf, but we set it almost at that shelf depth intentionally.
Should you get them kind of swimming across?
Exactly. So they'd see that suspended, or if they're cruising that area, you know, at that water level off in the deep, they're going to see that versus being right off the bottom. And mine, I actually caught mine out of that hole jigging. It was up in like 32, 33 feet of water, kind of up in that range is where he was hanging out.
So did you bring electronics like you had your your hummingbird?
I did bring the bird. Yeah, that, and that was a big weight. You know, when you're pulling stuff on a sled, so we made these pulks. So basically a pulk's just a sled with ropes, right? And we
sounds fancier when you call it
is, right, but it's not. It's just a sled with ropes, and then you make, I bought the clam sled pulling harness I used for my ice shack this year too.
Oh yeah.
Which worked really nice. And then you just take a couple of poles, run them off the front so that if you're going down a hill with it, it doesn't take your ankles out. It holds it behind you. So it's kind of just like some PVC pipes, made a rigid hitch for them. But you know, your gear and everything's like 80 pounds. You know, by the time you have your tent, all your food, all your warm weather gear, you know, and then you throw your tackle in the fish finder, which is a really big weight commitment, even with a lithium battery. I'd probably leave a pair of boots behind and take my fish finder with me. You know, because you just feel blind otherwise. Three of us had them and three of us don't. And the three that didn't seem to have as much fun fishing as we did. Because you're just jigging.
What about one of those old showdowns? Remember those? I wonder if that would be a better program for
us. Yeah, I think if you were going to do it as a regular, you would want to maybe invest. So I actually think what would be good is, you know, that guy was talking about that that little ball thing. What was that called?
Oh, yeah. The deeper
thing. You know, with that, with the phone, which we had phones anyway for photography and video. You know, not for phone because there's no phone service. But that with a battery pack, I think would be the way to go, because it would be it would give you everything you needed, you know, at not quite a good a quality, but good enough. Definitely a great compromise. Right. But, you know, the hard thing is for something you're going to do once every couple of years, it's quite an outlay. So as tempted as I was, I didn't pull the trigger on that.
So speaking of specialized gear, I noticed one thing in the pictures that I always thought were just kind of silly, but you know, I've seen people with their snowshoes and their poles out in the trail, but you said actually, I saw everybody had poles, or some people had poles, and you said they were actually really helpful for
walking. Yeah, if you can get past your ego, walking poles are the way to go. Like when you're walking on snow with crust, you know, so like your left foot will break through and your right foot won't, you know, or if you're walking in an old track and so part of it's frozen, part of it's not, you know, if you think about your balance and then you're pulling a sled and you're, you know, it throws you off. So having the poles, so I would just say on that trip, one thing, you know, sometimes people use hot tents and stuff in the boundary waters. They'll do a little wood stove in a tent, and we didn't do any of that. I just had my regular summer tent, little three-person Alps tent, and a warm sleeping bag and a good pad. The ground pad, I think, makes all the difference for winter camping. Probably the biggest thing I brought, because actually bigger than even my tent from a, you know, a rolled-up size. Because I, you know, that's where you're going to get cold is underneath for the most part. But I mean, our temps were pretty mild, so we stayed plenty warm even without heat.
Now, I know we talked about this earlier, but you said that like if like a few weeks before that, like Valentine's Day when it was 35 below, if you guys would have saw that weather, it would have been like reschedule.
We probably wouldn't have gone, you know, especially with our first time ever going to take on a trip like that. I mean, there were people that were tripping up there during that time. And not on drugs. They were just, I mean, winter tripping. And, you know, but those are, they're people that were pretty experienced and probably younger. I don't know if they're
probably younger.
Younger or not. But there's so much quality gear out there for this kind of thing. But even the trouble is that, I mean, at 20 below 30, that's just a whole different deal.
Yeah.
You know, you're really, our goal is to go up there and enjoy ourselves and catch some fish, not to just try not to die, you know? So there's kind of a happy balance there between the two.
Well, cool. So you would do it again, Jay?
Absolutely. In a heartbeat.
Maybe next time I'll come with you.
I look forward to that. That'd be great.
The fishing, it looked cool. So that part I'm jealous of. So
you should be.
I know. It looked good. And Ole got his trout.
Ole got his trout. And my Uncle Ron, that was his first trout he's ever caught through the ice.
Wow.
So to be able to get Uncle Ron on a trout, you know, on a trip, first time ever, that's pretty cool. I was glad I was there for it.
So, Jay, you know, as our official guest tonight, you know, we usually get a legend shared from our guest. And, you know, so we wondered if you had a legend from this trip that you would want to share.
Time will tell for sure. But the trip itself had so many, in my opinion, legendary things, right? The we didn't catch a ton of trout, but the size of trout we caught were just phenomenal. For me to have a fish that battled for 7 minutes or so, most of it on video, not all of it, I think was just incredible and something I'll never forget. And then watching my uncle catch his first ever lake trout through the ice on rod and reel. I just think there's so many parts of this trip for me that'll be legendary. You know, so when we hit like our 150th episode, I'll probably swing back around to this trip and pull a couple of legends out of it. So I would say the whole thing. You just listen to the long version of the legend.
Well, great, Jay. That was an awesome thing to do, and I appreciate you sharing that so I can stay warm in my ice shack and you could go experience that.
So, well, you know, to each his and her own, it keeps everybody from bumping into each other all the time.
That's right. That's right. If everybody went there, it wouldn't be so serene. So thanks for sharing that and for the trip. And I think with that, we are at the end of our episode. So thanks, everybody, for listening.
Tight lines.
Cheers.
Five. You've been listening to the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Say goodbye.
One of the most unique podcasts on the planet, where we talk about tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends. We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, signing off.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.